page 300, Commitment, by Theodore W. Adorno. Written in 1962, this essay concludes Adorno's debate with Benjamin by criticizing all directly political art. We are presented by Adorno's frank decision to support the moment of criticism and liberation in artists such as Kafka, Beckett, and Schoenberg, even if his own sociology of arts demonstrates the destruction of the audiences for their autonomous works. It is one of Adorno's key theses that the artistic intentions of, say, Brecht, which he implicitly interprets in terms of Benjamin's reading, are best realized not in terms of Brecht's own political plays, but in the supposedly apolitical works of the autonomous avant-garde. Adorno also disagreed with Sartre's alternative that human existence equals human freedom. That is, humans are free by definition regardless of their concrete situation. According to Adorno, the problematic relation of art and society is operative within the works of art, literally in their revision of reality, which is their material, yet which is their task to transcend. While Adorno shared Sartre's intent, he did not believe there was a shortcut to social relevance. Since Sartre's essay, What is Literature?, there has been less theoretical debate about commitment and autonomous literature. Nevertheless, the controversy over commitment remains urgent. So far as anything that merely concerns the life of the mind can be today, as opposed to sheer human survival. Page 301. Sartre was moved to issue his manifesto because he saw, and he was certain not the first to do so, works of art displayed side by side in a pantheon of optional edification, decaying into cultural commodities. In such coexistence, they desecrate each other. If any work, without its authors necessarily intending it, aims at a supreme effect, none can thereby truly tolerate a neighbor beside it. This solitary intolerance holds not only for individual works, but also for aesthetic genres or attitudes such as those once symbolized in the now half-forgotten controversy over commitment. There are two positions on objectivity which are constantly at war with one another. Even when intellectual life falsely presents them as at peace. A work of art that is committed stripes the magic from a work of art that is content to be a fetish, an idle pastime for those who would like to sleep through the deluge that threatens them. In an apoliticism that is in fact deeply political, for the committed, such works are a distraction from the battle of real interests, in which none is any longer exempt from the conflict between two great blocks. The possibility of mental life itself depends on this conflict to such an extent that only blind illusion can insist on a right that may be shattered tomorrow. For autonomous works of art, however, such considerations and the conception of art which underlies them are themselves the spiritual catastrophe of which the committed keep warning. Once the life of the mind renounces the duty and liberty of its own pure objectification, it has abdicated. Thereafter, works of art merely assimilate themselves seduciously to the prude existence against which they protest. In forms so ephemeral, the very charge made vice versa by committed against autonomous work, that from their first day they belong to the seminars in which they inevitably end. The menacing thrust of the antithesis is a reminder of how precarious the position of art is today. Each of these two alternatives negates itself to the other. Committed art, necessarily detached as art from reality, cancels the distance between the two. Art, for art's sake, denies by its absolute claims that ineradicable connection with reality, which is the polemical a priori of the very attempt to make art autonomous from the real. Between these two poles, the tension in which art has lived in every age till now is dissolved. The confusion of the debate on commitment. Contemporary literature itself suggests doubts as to the omnipotence of these alternatives, for it is not yet so completely subjugated to the course of the world as to constitute rival fronts. The Sartrean goats and the Valerian sheep will not be separated. Page 302. Even if politically motivated, commitment in itself remains politically polyvalent so long as it is not reduced to propaganda, whose pliancy marks any commitments by the subject. On the other hand, its opposite, known in Russian catechism as formalism, is not decried only by Soviet officials or libertarian existentialists. Even vanguard critics themselves frequently accuse so-called abstract texts of a lack of provocation, of social aggressivity. Conversely, Sartre cannot praise Picasso's Guernica too highly, yet he could hardly be convicted of formalists' sympathies in music or painting. He restricts his notion of commitment to literature because of its conceptual character. The writer deals with meanings. Footnote 1, text. Of course, but not only with them. If no world which enters a literary work ever wholly frees itself from its meaning in ordinary speech, so no literary work, not even the traditional novel, leaves these meanings unaltered, as they were outside it. Even an ordinary was, in a reported of something that was not, acquires a new formal quality from the fact that it was not so. The same process occurs in the higher levels of meaning of a work, all the way up to what once used to be called its idea. The special position that Sartre accords to literature must also be suspect to anyone who does not unconditionally subsum diverse aesthetics genres under a superior universal concept. The rudiments of external meanings are the irreducibly non-artistic elements in art. Its formal principle lies not in them, but in the dialectic of both moments, which accomplishes the transformation of meanings within it. The distinction between artist and littérateur is shallow, but it is true that the object of an aesthetic philosophy, even as understood by Sartre, is not the publicist's aspect of art. Still less, it is the message of a work. The latter oscillates untenably between the subjective intentions of the artist and the demands of an objectively explicit metaphysical meaning. In our country, this meaning generally turns out to be an uncommonly practical being. The social function of the talk about commitment has meanwhile become somewhat confused. Cultural conservatives who demand that a work of art should say something join forces with their political opponents against italic, hermetic works of art. Eulogies of relevance are more likely to find Sartre's hui clause profound than to listen patiently to a text whose language jolts signification and by its very distance from meaning revolts in advance against positivist subordination of meaning. From the atheist Sartre, on the other hand, the conceptual import of art is the premise of commitment. Yet, works banned in the East are sometimes demagogically denounced by local guardians of the authentic message because they apparently say what they in fact do not say. Page 303. The Nazis were already using the term cultural Bolshevism under the Weimar Republic, and hatred of what it refers to has survived the epoch of Hitler when it was institutionalized. Today it flares up again just as it did 40 years ago at works of the same kind, including some whose origin now go a long way back and are unmistakably part of an established tradition. Newspapers and magazines of the radical right constantly stir up indignation against what is unnatural, over-intellectual, morbid, and decadent. They know their readers. The insights of social psychology into authoritarian personality confirms them. The basic features of this type include conformism, respect for a petrified facade of opinion in society, and resistance to impulses that disturb its order or evoke inner elements of the unconscious that cannot be admitted. This hostility to anything alien or alienating can accommodate itself much more easily to literary realism of any provenance, even if it proclaims itself critical or socialist, than to work which swears alliance to no political slogans, but whose mere guise is enough to disrupt the whole system of rigid coordinates that govern authoritarian personalities, to which the latter clings all the more fiercely, the less capable they are of spontaneous appreciation of anything not officially approved. Campaigns to prevent the staging of Brecht's plays in Western Germany belong to a relatively superficial layer of political consciousness. They were not even particularly vigorous, or they would have taken much crasser forms after August the 13th. Footnote 2, text. By contrast, when the social contract with reality is abandoned and literary works no longer speak as though they were reporting fact, hairs start to bristle. Not the least of the weakness of the debate on commitment, it is that it ignores the effect produced by works whose own formal laws pay no heed to coherent effects. So long as it fails to understand what the shock of the unintelligible can communicate, the whole dispute resembles shadowboxing. Confusion in discussion of the problem do not indeed alter it, but they do make it necessary to rethink the alternative solutions proposed for it. Philosophy and art in Sartre. In aesthetic theory, commitment should be distinguished from tendency. Committed art in the proper sense is not intended to generate ameliorative measures, legislative acts, or practical institutions. Like earlier propagandists, tendency plays against syphilis, duels, abortion laws, or borstals, but to work at the level of fundamental attitudes. Page 304. For Sartre, its task is to awaken the free choice of the agent that makes authentic existence possible at all, as opposed to the neutrality of the spectator. But what gives commitment is aesthetic advantage over contentiousness also renders the content to which the artist commits himself inherently ambiguous. In Sartre, the notion of choice, originally a Kierkegaardian category, is heir to the Christian doctrine. He who is not with me is against me, but now voided of any concrete theological content. What remains is merely the abstract authority of a choice enjoined with no regard for the fact that the very possibility of choosing depends on what can be chosen.